This is a special episode of the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Show, specifically for Pride. And if you are part of my neurodivergent community, and if you are also anywhere on the LGBTQIA Two-Spirit Plus spectrum, then this episode is for you, especially if you don't feel like you are part of Pride or part of a community. And I just want to tell you that I'm going to dive right in because this episode is full of a very important message of love and caring and support just for you. You're listening to Feather Mane Soul Wisdom, a podcast for those looking to rediscover their wild spirit in spite of life's challenges. If you're living with a chronic illness or neurodivergent or consider yourself disabled, and you're looking to connect with your own inner untamed essence, then this show is for you. Your host is Kit Kelsto, Wild Spirit Storyteller. Thanks for listening, and now on to the episode. Hello and welcome. I'm Kit Kelsto, your host. So it is June 2026, which means it is Pride Month. And this is a month where the queer community gets to celebrate our unique individuality, our relentless existence, our joy and our essential being, and also reflect on the challenges that we're facing, as well as the ways in which we're building and reaching out to community. But if you are neurodivergent, there is a good chance that you have always had a difficult relationship with community or social groups, especially if you're autistic or AUDHD. There are a lot of variables in being in a group. And one of the things that I've realized this Pride Month, and it really was sparked by something I read, I'll quote it for you here shortly, was that as much as I know that I am non-binary genderqueer, as much as I know my gender identity, I really don't feel like I'm a part of the Pride celebrations because I don't feel like I'm a part of community. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of them are baked into my own trauma, my complex PTSD, rejection sensitive dysphoria. But some of them are also just kind of baked into how society treats neurodivergent individuals. And all of this kind of got me to thinking about my grief coaching specialization. And as I've been really kind of making the connections between the grief that we experience as neurodivergent individuals, the grief that I experience or my author community experiences, grief in the queer community, the trans community especially, that there are just a lot of dots to connect here. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about in today's special Pride episode. So what I read that kind of sparked me on this journey was in a yoga newsletter I receive. And it came from a yoga organization that says a lot of good things about being inclusive, but yet feels really much built for a certain body type, a certain neurotype, a certain physical ability type. It's like they want to be inclusive in some ways and not inclusive in others. And what they said was, yoga reminds us that our individual well-being is deeply connected to the well-being of our communities. As we move through Pride Month, we invite you to reflect on the ways your practice supports connection, compassion, and belonging, both on and off the mat. And I sat with that for a while. And on one hand, it sounds very good. I mean, one of the things that I do with yoga is I am very much attuned into the energetic bodies, the koshas, with, you know, the yoga's mission of yoga is a way to know the self through the body. I'm very much tied into that. And so I very much get that if the individual people in a community are not doing well, then the entire community isn't going to do well. And then inviting in the ways that your practice supports connection, compassion, and belonging, both on and off the mat. And I thought about this, and I'm realizing that there are a lot of people this month that are feeling very left out and that are feeling very much as if they're not a part of a community. And this has to do in large part with social constructs, with the way people imagine that certain genders or certain individuals should look. But it also has to do with the way that the general neurotypical society treats neurodivergent individuals. And so what I want to talk about today is how to support yourself when you're not feeling like you're a part of a community. I want to talk about ways in which you can find and create your own community. But mostly, I also want to talk about processing and dealing with the grief that comes with feeling like you're not a part of a community. One of the main reasons why neurodivergent individuals struggle to find community is because of rejection-sensitive dysphoria. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you are told for your entire life that what you're doing is wrong, how you're presenting yourself is wrong, the way that you're quote-unquote humaning is wrong, then you're going to start feeling an acute sensation of rejection anytime you're starting to feel excluded. And what that leads to is that can lead to social anxiety, that can lead to people basically self-rejecting themselves or keeping themselves out of community situations. And because of that, that means that a lot of neurodivergent individuals don't feel like they are part of a community in general outside of any small online or in-person groups that they may be a part of that are comprised of primarily neurodivergent folks. Now, if you layer on top of that, not just the current political climate, the current climate of prosecution, and some would say outright genocide against transgender individuals, you can also be dealing with body dysphoria. You can be dealing with a situation where, due to the community you live in, due to the state you live in the U.S. or in the U.K., due to the people around you that you either are unable to transition or do not feel that it's safe to transition or to even begin exploring how you might change your body to better align with your gender identity. And so you might be a transgender individual or a genderqueer individual who would like to make changes to your physical presentation. And because of where you live, it's not safe. You don't feel like it's safe. You don't feel like you're going to be accepted. Then that adds an additional layer of grief. So I want to pause for a moment and state that a lot of what I'm speaking about here is coming from my own feelings and my own lived experiences. I sincerely hope that if you are somebody who shares these lived experiences, that what I'm saying actually resonates with you. But please know that I am not speaking for the entire neurodivergent community, and I am very much not speaking for the entire queer community. So how do we deal with those feelings of grief? The first step would be to acknowledge that they're there. Grief is not something that, if you're thinking of healing, like, you know, you scrape your knee, you put a Band-Aid on it, maybe a little antibiotic ointment, 4 to 5 days, it goes away. 2 weeks, a month later, your knee doesn't look like it's ever been scraped. That is a level of healing where the issue goes away completely, is not an issue ever again. Grief, along with many of the other things that we deal with, isn't like that. It doesn't go away. It can lessen over time. We can learn to live with it over time. And it may always be a part of us. Now, there may be a time where it doesn't hurt as bad, where it doesn't feel as bad. And this is kind of described, there's a cartoon isn't the right word, but like a meme or a diagram that I've seen go around social media quite a bit that shows a marble in a jar. And when you first experience grief, you experience it very acutely. It encompasses the whole jar, which would be you and your being. And eventually as you go on, it's not so much that the marble gets smaller or the grief gets smaller, but the jar or your container, your body, your experiences, yourself, your soul gets bigger to accommodate the grief. And so the grief gets lessened because basically you've learned to deal with it, to companion with it. You've learned to almost befriend it rather than try to shove it away and make it this big, scary monster. It's like the, you know, you're laying in bed and you see a shadow on your wall and you might think, you know, oh my God, what is that? Or you hear a noise and you think, you know, somewhere else in the house and you're like, oh my gosh, what is that? You turn on the light, you realize, oh, that's what that shadow was. Or you step out to the living room, you see that the cats are kind of playing, you know, having the zoomies at like 2 a.m. and you're like, oh, okay, that's what the noise is. You shed some light on it. You've made it... much smaller in its environment without actually stopping whatever's there. You know, you're not moving what's causing the shadow unless it's bothering you. Your cats may stop having the zoomies, but they'll have the zoomies again and you'll be like, okay, I remember that's the cats having zoomies. It's the same sort of thing when you're dealing with grief. So step one is to actually say, hey, I'm grieving. So in this case, it's Pride Month. It is perfectly acceptable and perfectly okay to say, hey, this is Pride Month. I am not feeling celebrated. I am not feeling like I am part of a community that's being celebrated. And that hurts. So acknowledging that, putting some sunlight on it, putting, you know, some awareness around it. The next step is, especially when you're starting to deal with rejection sensitive dysphoria, would be to actually think about, not so much, I don't want to say reality, because what you're perceiving is reality, but maybe think about that narrative and how what you're seeing and feeling and experiencing either is happening or isn't happening. So, you know, it's Pride Month. I, you know, don't know how active you are in your communities on social media. Maybe you're seeing a lot of people post, you know, different things and getting a lot of comments. You post, maybe you're talking about your gender identity. Maybe you feel cute one day and you're sharing a picture and saying, hey, I feel cute today. And you're not getting the feedback or the validation you want. One of the ways to look at that, for example, is to look at the algorithms and say, okay, the social media algorithms are set to promote certain things. Is it possible that people care, but the algorithm is suppressing my content? And the answer to that quite often is yes. So then once you kind of start to think about that and go, okay, so in my case, I don't feel like I'm a part of Pride or the community, in part because I don't feel like I'm a part of community in general, unless it's like these small little pockets that I have created for myself on the internet. It's not related to this, but you know, I can think of a group that I'm in where I very much feel like I'm on the outside looking in. And I don't think that that's the case. I think that I'm a lot more welcomed and a lot more supported than I am. But that's just the impression I'm getting. And honestly, because I haven't spoken up about that, thank you, rejection sensitive dysphoria, I don't think there's been a lot of conversations about that. But I'm imagining that that's not what is meant. Obviously, I could probably fix that by speaking up. I could also fix that by leaving the group and finding a group where I do feel welcome and I do feel supported. And so I know for myself, and this I would say with step three, is to kind of work through this. Why do you not feel like you're part of a community? Well, for me, I have not done anything to change my presentation. Therefore, when a lot of people look at me, they assume my gender identity aligns with the one that I was assigned at birth because I haven't done anything to try to change that other than I dress, well, I have no sense of style. I dress in my comfortable clothes, often masculine presenting. And so that's just how I come across. Which is good, I mean, because it's masculine presenting, but there's still parts of my body that mean that every time I go to the feed store, I get ma'am. It's like, you know, and I just say thank you. I'm like, whatever, they don't know any better. I just deal with it. But I feel like because I am not as visible in my transition, a lot of my transition has been how I view myself internally, how I feel about myself, the love and care and support I give myself. That's not externally visible. Therefore, I don't feel like I am a part of the trans community, even though as a non-binary genderqueer person, I very much am. And I very much could encounter the issues that my community deals with as far as using public restrooms and that sort of thing, because in many ways I am gender nonconforming. The thinking about it, I want to caution you not to assume that the problem is with you. And I feel like I'm probably going to have to do a part two of this because I need to talk about how the community at large, and I don't care if this is the queer community, the writing community, basically the neurotypical people need to do better with accepting and supporting and accommodating the neurodivergent people around them. And that's where the neurodivergent grief kind of collides with the grief of being queer at the moment. Like grief is one of those things that the more I think about it and the more I start connecting dots, it does not fall into neat little silos. For example, on Pet Grief Pathfinder, because I started my journey being certified in pet loss grief support. And I just want to say, if you have lost a pet and you're struggling with the grief, I do encourage you to go to petgriefpathfinder.com. You can book a free call with me. There are monthly grief circles you can join. I have a newsletter. You know, there's support for you there. My grief journey began there, but I very quickly realized, I mean, even just like one or two classes into my certification, I very quickly realized that the other communities that I'm a member of, being a published author, being neurodivergent, being queer, being disabled, that there's grief inherent and grief that happens in those communities as well. And a lot of it overlaps. It doesn't, there's no, you know, it's not like the grocery store where you have the dairy case and then you have the frozen food section. And the frozen food section is all, you know, okay, here's your ice cream, here's your frozen pizzas, here's your French fries. It's not all nice and neat like that when you come to grief. Grief overlaps, grief pulls on all of our life experiences. And so this Pride Month, you know, I'm talking about not feeling like being part of the queer community, but it comes from a lot of other places. And so as a neurodivergent individual, I often feel like even though I may be like in a workplace, my reviews may say exceeds expectations every single year, I don't feel like a welcomed or a good member of that community because my neurodivergent brain does not fit in and operate the way the neurotypical brains work in that space. And I think that happens a lot in the queer spaces as well, because, and again, some of this is cultural, some of this is society, but there seems to be a focus on very specific groups of queer individuals and very specific presentations of those individuals. And so what happens is, while there is a huge overlap between neurodivergence and between being queer, you know, again, across the whole LGBTQIA2 spirit plus spectrum, there's a big overlap there. And so if you're in a community that is often forgotten by kind of the grand narrative that is presented by what you see on in media, maybe the loudest voices on social media, if you're part of a community, if you're on that spectrum that is not well represented, you can feel left out. And so I think it's important to acknowledge the way that all of our identities interact with each other, intersect with each other, and influence one another. And I think it's important to think about how the grief that we may be feeling, and not just this month, but any month out of the year, how the grief that we may be feeling arises out of the intersections of those identities, the way that those identities have been shaped. Because the truth is, a lot of the things that I feel in the about not being a part of the queer community, I also feel in the neurodivergent community, which is, you know, kind of earth-shaking a little bit to think about, because while I am not, let me back up a bit. While I am very good at masking and presenting on my gender identity, and yes, that is a form of masking, where as I've gotten older and as I have entered in different stages of my life, it is no joke that if you are in perimenopause, it gets harder and harder and harder to mask your neurodivergence. And some of that has to do with burnout. Some of that has to do with the fact that, you know, you've reached a certain age and you just don't care anymore. You know, masking and fitting in just isn't as important as it used to be in certain contexts. But I have noticed that the ways that I don't feel like I don't fit into the neurodivergent community is also ways that I don't feel like I fit into the queer community. And that comes down to gender dysphoria. That comes down to how I feel in my body, the messages that I've taken in, and how I'm working to work with those messages, to do the wild spirit storytelling, and the work that I do with wild spirit storytelling, and the work that I do with the grief pathfinder. Because that, if there's one thing that ties together my grief this month, it's the dysphoria. It's that I don't look like somebody who gets attention online. I don't look like somebody who matches my gender identity, and I don't believe I ever will, for many reasons. And so because of that, this month has been very difficult. And I got a little more personal in this episode than I think I thought I was going to. But I'm also sharing again in the hopes that you are not, you know, that if you're listening to this and you're resonating with this, that you're not alone. I said in the opening that this was going to be a big old message of love and support for you. And I feel like what I have said maybe has not been. But where I want to go with this is that when we acknowledge the grief, when we kind of dig under the surface and find out what's causing the grief, we keep asking that existential question, why? What we can do is, instead of meeting that grief with recriminations, with feeling bad, with feeling like we missed something, feeling like we should do something better, we can actually meet that grief with absolutely radical, absolutely enthusiastic, absolutely ecstatic self-acceptance. Radical acceptance. Note I didn't say love. If you can meet all of that with self-love, that is amazing and wonderful, and I'm so happy for you. But I don't want you to feel like that if you're not at the point yet where you can meet that with self-love, that you can at least meet that with self-acceptance, radical acceptance. And radical acceptance is not giving up. Radical acceptance is not accepting the status quo. It is saying, you know what? This sucks right now. This is what I'm feeling right now. This is what I'm dealing with right now. And it's okay not to be okay. And I know that's kind of a cliched statement, but it's also a good starting point. When you're dealing with grief, to say it's okay that you're not okay allows you to feel your grief, whatever form that takes. If you're breaking down in tears, if you want to scream into a pillow, if you can go to a remote area and just scream your frustrations in the woods, that's even better. I've been known to do that since I live very remotely, and it is very helpful. So I highly recommend screaming into the woods if nobody's around to get concerned. Screaming into a pillow, you know, giving squishy hugs to your cat or your dog, crying, however you can express what you need in that moment. I encourage you to find out what you need and to express that. Self-acceptance just says, hey, it's okay that I'm not okay. It's okay that I am feeling these things. And if you can, self-acceptance is saying, I am here for myself. I'm going to support myself through this. And I will get through this. It may not feel good. It may suck. As the mem says, this may pass like a kidney stone, but it will pass. But that self-acceptance that you are loved, you are not alone to yourself, is super powerful. And that's the message that I guess I want to leave everybody with today. You are not alone. You are amazing. I know you may not feel it right now if you're dealing with the grief of pride. You may feel like you don't belong. You may feel like you're isolated and alone. You are not alone. You are amazing. It is okay to grieve. It is very human to grieve. It is very natural to grieve. And I say that in the sense of nature and the wider world. Animals grieve. It is okay. And once you acknowledge that, and once you acknowledge those emotions, I feel like doors are going to open. So I'm going to make a note. Next week, I'm going to talk about what the community can do to support us, the neurodivergent community, what the queer community can do, what our online communities can do to support us, and how you can stop masking. Because the other part of radical acceptance is accepting yourself exactly how you are. And who knows, I might even share another story. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening. If you are a member of the queer community, I want to wish you the happiest and most joyful pride. I am with you. I am celebrating with you. And if you're in my neurodivergent community, I would love to invite you to my neurodivergent grief circles. They happen once a month. You can go to feathermanesoul.com/events and find out when the next one is and sign up. I would love to have you join me. Thank you so much. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Until next week. You've been listening to the Feathermane Soul Wisdom Podcast, hosted by Kit Kelstow. Learn more about Feathermane Soul at feathermanesoul.com. As a wild spirit storyteller, Kit is passionate about helping those who are neurodivergent, disabled, or living with chronic illness rediscover their own inner wild spirit. Visit FeathermaneSoul.com to receive free gifts or book a free call with Kit to discuss how wild spirit storytelling can help you. Music is Running with the Horses by Purple Planet Music. This podcast is hosted on the Muse Charmer Media Network. Find out more by visiting FeathermaneSoul.com/show and following the links to the Muse Charmer Network. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow wherever you're hearing my voice, or tell a friend who may be interested. Thank you.